Last month, a judge awarded a Sydney mother $360,000 in compensation in a medical negligence case over the death of her newborn baby. It was by no means a record payout, but it highlighted just how inadequate medical record keeping is in Australian hospitals. By some estimates, as many as 18,000 people die every year as a result of medical error, while 50,000 people suffer a permanent injury. But there is no systematic collection and linking treatment error data, so it's impossible to know for sure how many medical mistakes cause serious harm or death. Here's Emily Burke with the first of her series of special reports on patient safety.
Some people believe there's a silent epidemic of error in the Australian health system.
I think it's so difficult for people to believe that doctors make mistakes, and the way it's been handled is, well, let's keep it quiet.
Lorraine Long set up the Medical Error Action Group almost 20 years ago. Between 70 and 100 complaints come to her each day, half of which she says can reasonably be classified as medical error.
From what I've found, about 1 in 10 patients will experience a mishap. One of the most severe I've found is wrong site surgery, meaning the wrong eye, wrong leg, wrong hip, even the wrong patient. It's either a complacency or it's lack of concentration, or they just don't know and they're taking a gung-ho approach. We'll open them up and let's see what we find. But there is a degree of shoddy medical procedures that's worrying, and that needs to be addressed immediately.
Official and accurate figures on deaths and injuries from medical mistakes are hard to come by. Less so are the real-world stories of fatal error.
I realise it was mistakes made along the way, but that safety check is set up so that these things don't happen.
Bianca Jen's father was Benvenuto Camina. He died in hospital in December 2010 after being given medication he was allergic to directly before surgery. But Mr. Camina was wearing an allergy wristband warning of his multiple allergies to Ventolin, morphine and an antibiotic. But the senior anaesthetist on the day didn't check.
And when he was asked at the coroner's inquest if he checked it, he said he just didn't consistently check any armbands. So it wasn't part of his procedure to check armbands. He would occasionally, but not always. That, to me, was the last line of defence, and he failed to do that. And that's his, to me, that would have saved my father.
Do you remember what they determined to be the cause of death?
They said my father had a heart attack.
And so a week later, what was their explanation?
They said that they gave my father medication that similar to what he was allergic to.
And that was the cause of death?
That was the cause of death. They didn't say it was anaphylaxis. They said that it caused him to have a heart attack. They didn't say it was anyone's fault. They didn't say there was an error. They just said that's what happened. And to me, at that time, I just couldn't understand how could that have happened if it was written in all his documents. The coroner found that he died from anaphylaxis, which caused a cardiac arrest eventually. And she made recommendations that the doctor from the pre-admission clinic, the anaesthetist at the pre-admission clinic, review his procedures because he failed to identify another allergy when he should have. And then she recommended safety verification processes be, although they already had them, and the doctor just felt that he didn't need to be a part of them on the day. Either the hospital didn't enforce these verification processes, they existed, but if you didn't do them, nobody got in trouble for it, or if, you know, it wouldn't be coming to your attention if nothing terrible happened.
In 1995, the landmark Quality in Australian Healthcare study found the rate of so-called adverse events was 16.6% among hospital patients, accounting for around 18,000 deaths and 50,000 cases of permanent disability. The study's methodology and its conclusions have been hotly contested within medical, academic and political circles. But Lorraine Long argues little has changed since the report was handed to the government in the 1990s.
I don't see a reduction in medical error at all. I still see cover-ups. I still see the lengths health departments will go to smother things and destroy records. But the errors are just the same. I'm not seeing a reduction. And you would think with all the recommendations made by coroners around the country and those recommendations being paid attention to and implemented, that systems would be better.
Lawyer Catherine Booth heads Maurice Blackburn's National Medical Negligence Practice.
We receive hundreds of complaints every month from patients who've had medical treatment that they're not happy with. Only a few of them will actually go on to have a successful medical negligence claim. The law now is that you can only sue if you have a permanent injury which is classified as significant, which means greater than 5% whole body impairment. The types of cases we see, the common sorts of things that go wrong are in the area of obstetrics, emergency care, not recognising the seriousness of somebody's condition and being sent home, operative errors and, of course, misdiagnosis.
And she says the majority of complaints involve a small number of the same clinicians.
About 3% of doctors accounting for 50% of complaints. That was a really big piece of research done over many years by well-known researchers. And I think that study means that there's a great opportunity for the regulators and the risk managers to achieve better outcome in safety and substantially reduce the number of complaints and bad outcomes if they target the rogue 3% of frequent flyers.
10 years ago, Australia introduced the world's first nationwide open disclosure policy. It was designed to enable health services and clinicians to communicate openly and honestly with patients when healthcare doesn't go to plan. In practice, it involves acknowledging adverse events, expressing regret, and explaining what steps are being taken to manage the consequences. But multiple studies have found that health professionals remain deeply concerned about the legal ramifications of open disclosure, in particular legal liability. Lorraine Long from the Medical Error Action Group says open disclosure hasn't delivered.
I was on the one of the open disclosure task forces, and I found it quite interesting that the hospital said, well, we'll tell you what went wrong, but you're not allowed to sue us. And until you sign this document, we won't disclose that information to you. So it's not very open, is it? What hospitals don't understand is that, oh, just come clean and own up and stop panicking and going running off to your lawyers knowing what to do. The majority of people will not sue you. I said what drives people to sue is to find out what went on and what went wrong.
The open disclosure policy has been reviewed and a new set of standards will be endorsed later this year. The updated policy contains new elements, including an apology and for the word sorry to be part of that, but without making any speculative statements or apportioning blame.
Emily Burke with that report, and tomorrow we'll bring you her report on the scale and impact of prescribing errors in Australian hospitals and whether the new area of electronic medication management systems will make a difference.